Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
Lethal simplicity. Yeah, I like to score fast. It's hard not to be a Noles fan. Get Florida State back. I want a damn good defense. We're still undefeated. Blame no one. Make no excuses. Do something.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. After a decent layoff there, as always, I'm your host, Jason Staples, and this podcast is sponsored by Lewis Marquez, Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, and Resolution Home Loans. Chad and Shannon just killing it in the mortgage origination game and making sure that, listen, you listen to this podcast, you know the best places to go for real estate in the state of Florida. All right, so today's podcast, I'm going to focus mostly on getting a little bit more of a breakdown of what Florida State got in the 2019 recruiting class. I'll deal with some mailbag stuff toward the end. I need to do a more extended mailbag or several episodes of mailbag stuff. Just been falling behind a little bit on that of late, but I've got a lot of questions and a lot of comments to get through. Won't get through all of those today, but I will want to get through more evaluation of some of the players that Florida State got in this class than I was able to get on the initial preliminary signing day episode. But actually, before I get to that more extended breakdown, there are a couple comments and questions I do want to get to that were in direct response to some of the stuff that I discussed on that signing day episode. You'll recall that I mentioned that I felt like this wide receiver class was the best wide receiver class Florida State's landed in at least 15 years. And I got a few people who were, as I expected, maybe a little bit skeptical of this. So I'll go ahead and get to those first. The first one is from B. Liu. He asks, why do you believe a group of three-star wide receivers will be such difference makers? Highlights are great, but nobody ever puts together a reel of bad plays. The same discussion is always on the not-so-optimistic side when it comes to other programs landing tons of three-stars. The discussion is then about how those programs won't win with a collection of three-stars. I understand your evaluations are not based on stars or rankings or recruiting rankings, but this class does not compare to anything like Bama's class last year, wide receivers class, stars or not. Now, not that it was being compared, but to say it's the best in 15 years? Why? I think it's a justifiable question. Now, before we get any further, though, I should note that this is not just a collection of three-stars, though. This is not, it's not as though Florida State landed 5 3-stars. I mean, both Warren Thompson and Treshawn Harrison are high 4-star recruits. Treshawn Harrison ranked as the number 7 athlete in the country, not ranked as a wide receiver, but if he were ranked as a wide receiver, would be ranked very highly. The same with Warren Thompson. Warren Thompson is a 4-star recruit, ranked as about the 28th best wide receiver prospect in the country. And, you know, a guy that his upside is significantly higher than that. I don't think that's necessarily an unfair ranking, though. I think that's probably about right. So that's two reasonably high 4-stars that are in the class. And that in itself puts it in discussion, in the discussion of Florida State's best recruiting classes in a while. Now, I also lumped Cameron McDonald in there as well, who is another 4-star player. And again, a 6'4", 220 matchup problem. Who's going to line up at wide receiver, at tight end, in different spots. So that's another guy that is a 4-star out of those 6 players. That's 3 solid 4-star recruits. So it's not just a matter of 3-stars. But then you have to look at who those 3-stars are. Jordan Young is ranked as a 3-star. But Barton Simmons from 24/7 Sports commented on signing day, that, or I think maybe the day after signing day, he said, listen, if we'd have had more time and had a chance to get exposed more to Jordan Young and to spend more time breaking him down, it's very possible that guy would have been a 5-star. See, he's only ranked as a 3-star because they didn't see enough. But he conceded that when you look at his tape, that's 5-star tape. When you look at what Jordan Young was able to do against top competition in the state of Georgia, just look at the numbers, and it's impressive. And then you look at how he did it, and you go, whoa, yeah, this is not 3-star tape. But, you know, they didn't have a chance to see him in all-star settings and in camps and so on, which is why he wasn't ranked as highly. But when I see him, and then when you look at what coaches who actually got the chance to to see full games of him, say, when you look at what they're talking about behind the scenes on that, he may be the best wide receiver prospect in the class over Thompson and Harrison. I think he is. And would have an argument had he been able to go to camps and do all this stuff and play against, you know, some of the other top guys in the country. You're looking at a guy that might have been ranked as highly as maybe top five in the country at that position. And keep in mind, I was saying this when he was back before he was even really a realistic option for Florida State. Back when he was committed to Tennessee, didn't necessarily look like he'd visit Florida State. I was already saying that. So that's number one. But I do think it's a good point that lots of people, I think when you say that things would be a little bit less optimistic when other programs were landing three-star players, and I think that's right. I do think that's right. That we do have to be cautious of overvaluing things that we see that we're overfamiliar with. But I don't think Jordan Young is one of those situations. I think he just happens to be a guy. He is a rare prospect who got overlooked in today's system, in today's world. And part of that is because of the upheaval in the recruiting industry over the last year. Part of that is just that he didn't camp and do all the stuff that a lot of players do. And so much about discovering players these days is about getting kids to camp and getting them in front of these guys who see the numbers. But when you see Jordan Young's track numbers, when you see his body size, and then you see that tape, that guy, he's no three-star. I'm sorry. That guy is a borderline five-star. And the only reason he's not a five-star, and again, Barton Simmons said this, the only reason he's not that high is because they didn't get a chance to see him more. They didn't get a chance to see him in the All-Star game settings and other settings to see how he'd do against the very best. But he's in that discussion. Now, as for the other two three-stars, I think they're fairly ranked. I think DeMarcus Adams is a three-star. If anything, I think he might be ranked a little too highly. And Keyshawn Helton is another guy that I think it's fair to rank him as a three-star. But each guy brings some nice things to the table that help balance out as I discussed on that podcast, they help balance out what Florida State is looking for in terms of the wide receiver position. But the reason I say it's the best in 15 years is that I think the top three guys, Young, Harrison, Thompson, I think those three are better than any three Florida State has brought in at least the last 15 years. And then you add Cameron McDonald, you add DeMarcus Adams, you add Keyshawn Helton, and that makes it deeper. But the top three guys I have as having a higher ceiling and as being less raw than any class that Florida State's brought in the last 15 years. Now, Ted protests that and says, you know, 2011 also had Nick O'Leary. Now, he was a tight end, but he was expected to receive a lot. So if you look at it from the angle of catching balls, 2011 was amazing. Also, Green should have been an impact player in your rankings. Even at that time, he was as polished as it gets coming out of St. Thomas under that old staff. So I would say 2011 was greater than 2015 if you're considering the coach and the philosophy. Now, in terms of the new class, 2018, I agree, has amazing potential. Jordan Young is for real. And if there isn't some reason we don't know about yet that he was overlooked for a while. Now, a couple things about this. The way that I rank this is different. So I had Nick O'Leary in those rankings as a pass catcher, but I did not have Nick O'Leary in 2011 as high a ceiling player as, say, Jordan Young or Treshawn Harrison, because as I pointed out when he was going pro, and as I talked about this last year when I was talking about Ryan Izzo being a better pro prospect than Nick O'Leary, you had to deal with the fact that he just was not that big. He was shorter-armed, shorter-bodied tight end, and not a guy that is all that explosive. Not really a matchup problem. Really good college player, and I had him ranked as an impact player coming out, but an impact player kind of with a caveat that it was more about he was going to make an impact and be a solid player, but was not the kind of matchup nightmare that you're going to get in the normal impact player. So you've got that. Now, as for Green, I did not have Green as an impact player Nor would I again if he was coming out of high school. And again, it's because he's 6 foot. Actually, about 5'11 and change. And small body, not a 4'3, you know, not a track guy, world-class guy. So when you look at my potential difference maker and impact player rankings, an impact player is a rare prospect. Not only a first-year contributor, but a future All-American, probable high draft pick. And I wouldn't have Green as that because of size, because of physical traits. And instead, he was a tweener between the potential difference maker and an outstanding starter. And he wound up being more of a difference maker than an outstanding starter, but he was right on the edge of those, not in the impact player category. So given all that, let's go ahead and get to breaking down, and not all of this does quite as well on air as it does on the podcast, but I am going to post on the recruiting tab on the podcast website, I'm going to post a spreadsheet that has my rankings of how I put together all these various players and how I evaluate them in terms of categories coming into their freshman year. But overall, this is a good class. It was not a great class in terms of you look at some of the top heavy classes in recent years, that 2016 and 2017 class, both of those classes had more elite prospects in terms of guys that project as matchup problems and impact players and so on. But this is a really good class, and I don't think there were any whiffs in this class. That this is not a class where I think they had a whole lot of misses where I just can't see that guy developing. I think this was a very solid transitional class. It was as good as what I think you could expect in that context. Now, once again, I tier my recruiting evaluations at the end of each process. I tier what can kind of be expected from different players. And again, those categories that I place guys in, and there has to be a little bit of wiggle room because some guys don't necessarily fit one category exactly the right way. Again, Green is an example of that, where he came in really polished and a guy that you could expect to maybe make some early contributions, but was not going to be the other characteristics of, say, an impact player. So there's a little bit of sliding on this, but I have several categories. I have an impact player, a potential difference maker, an outstanding starter, a starter, depth, and then the special teams category. Specialty players who I don't expect to play anything beyond special teams. In this class, I have two guys marked out as impact players, and I may regret this, but I have two guys marked out as impact players in this class. One is Jaden Woodby, the safety from California. He's an early enrollee, and usually, by the way, to be an impact player, those impact players are going to be early enrollees. If you're going to expect somebody to make an early impact, usually it's going to have to be an early enrollee in today's game. There's just too much going on. There are exceptions to that, but again, usually it boils down to early enrollees are going to be in the impact player category. If you're on the verge of being an impact player, but you are a fall enrollee, you may get rolled back into that potential difference maker category. Now, the way I have impact player defined is that this is a rare prospect who projects as a first-year contributor or a second-year contributor as a quarterback and projects as a future All-American or high draft pick. I think Woodby is right on the verge of all of that. I think he's going to be a first-year contributor, both on special teams and on the defense. And I think he projects as a potential high draft pick or All-American, depending on how he runs. So Woodby is a big physical safety. One of the things that sticks out on his high school tape, though, is his nose for the football. He's one of those guys that's always around the ball, a lot of deflection, interception, those types of things, which shows that he understands where he needs to be. He's capable of playing both in the box and deep third. He doesn't have Derwin James range, that kind of thing, as a bigger safety. Not very many people do, but he's got good range, above average range for a guy that might well play it. He might well end up playing that safety position at like 220, 225. I mean, that's a big boy, and he's going to be able to play. I think they'll end up playing him a good bit in the box as a kind of hybrid safety linebacker type. We'll see that. But this, he's a guy that gives you a lot of flexibility defensively, gives you a lot of playmaking ability as a defender. And in today's game, where you want a guy that can both tackle in space and play the pass at the safety position, I think he can do a lot there. Now, he's not somebody that you want to get manned up on anybody in one-on-one coverage. He needs to either be a intermediate or short zone player or a deep third. He's not somebody that you want playing man-to-man, but he can do those other things really, really well. I think maybe I'd have him a tick behind Hamza Nasiruddin in terms of what I expect his ceiling to be. Nasiruddin I had as an impact player last year. I think he still is he's probably a tick behind him, because Nasiruddin is more a little more bendy and a little bit more explosive and has a little bit more flexible hips in that regard. Would be a little bit stiffer. Actually reminds me a good bit of Taylor Mays, the old safety from USC. Maybe not quite as fast as Mays, but he might actually be in that same speed range. I think Mays ran like a 4.5 area, but that's the kind of player you're getting. You're getting a thumper at the second level. And again, I think he's going to be somebody that's going to get some time in the secondary as a freshman, as an early enrollee, and he's going to be a major impact on special teams as a freshman. So there's one impact player. The other impact player in this class, and I've gone back and forth on this, I've got Jordan Young in there. I think Jordan Young has the potential as a wide receiver. The more I went back and I looked at it, the more I said, you know, yeah, he's going to have to learn how to run routes. You know, yeah, he's got some rawness to him. But the traits of being able to do a lot of this stuff earlier than normal are there. Now, he's not an early enrollee, and this is why I may regret having him as an impact player. But danged if I don't think that guy can get, say, 10 or 15 catches as a freshman and be one of those guys that you can put out there and run on some vertical routes and some dig routes and do some things that they do in this offense and be a player as a freshman. So those are the two guys that I have marked as impact players, guys that I project as first year contributors. The reason I bumped Jordan Young up, even though I'm not quite as clear about how much impact he's going to have as a freshman, is the second half of that. I think he's a future All-American and probable high draft pick. If he develops as he can, with the traits that he has, you're looking at a guy he's got as high a ceiling as a wide receiver, for the NFL draft as what you would want. I mean, I've gone back and forth. People have asked, one of the other questions that I got is, you know, what player comp do you have for him? And it's really hard for Jordan Young to get a good player comp. I mean, you watch his tape and you're like, man, there's some Julio Jones in there, but he's not as big as Julio. So, and I don't think it's fair to put that kind of expectation on him, but you know, there's some Amari Cooper, there's some DeAndre Hopkins, a lot of similarities to DeAndre Hopkins. There's some similarities also to Sammy Watkins. I mean, he's in that kind of class as a prospect to me, which, again, Florida State has not landed one of those Amari Cooper, Sammy Watkins, DeAndre Hopkins, those types at that position in years. And I think with Jordan Young, they may just have done that. So my next category is the potential difference maker. And that's a matchup problem who projects as an all-conference player, maybe in the All-American area, but projects as an all-conference player, likely high to mid-draft pick, probably going to need a year or two to develop, usually. So if this is a high-ceiling player that is a possible All-American, it's because they're here because they probably need a year or two to develop. If this is more of an all-conference guy, then they may be a little more polished. And the other guy that I thought was on the verge of being an impact player in this class is Treshawn Harrison. And he's a guy, he's probably going to make some impact as a freshman, partly because of his ability on jet sweeps and his ability to do some things in the run game and all this. He brings some speed to the table that they don't have at that position. You know, George Campbell has that kind of speed, but he doesn't have the wiggle that Harrison does. And again, Harrison is he's a special prospect and a potential matchup problem for years to come. Now, as a non-early enrollee, and having, I think, just a little lower ceiling than Jordan Young, I ended up putting him here. I may regret that. He's right on the verge here, and on the fringe for me. But I have him down as a potential difference maker. Again, I just couldn't rank him above, say, where I put a Keith Gavin or a DJ Matthews in prior years. Even though he's bigger than DJ Matthews and more physical and more ready to play than DJ Matthews was, significantly less polished than Keith Gavin, and also a good bit faster than Keith Gavin. I just couldn't quite put him there above where I had those guys. Same thing, I had George Campbell a few years ago as a potential difference maker rather than an impact player, and I think he comes in a lot more polished than George Campbell, and with more potential to make an impact than George Campbell early on. But again, the traits are not quite rare enough to project in that impact player category for me. Now, I know that the coaching staff would actually disagree with me on this. They actually have him, they would have him in the impact player category. They expect some early contribution from him, and they think the world of this kid, and they've seen him a lot more than I have. So again, this is a guy that's right on the verge of those two categories. And I think there's some cutoff right underneath Treshawn Harrison to the next guy on the list. Other potential difference makers here, Robert Cooper. I think he's the next highest ceiling guy in this class. You watch him in high school and he's bigger and stronger than anybody else, and just pushes guys around. And then you watched him in the Under Armour All-American stuff, he was, again, pushing those guys around, pushing his peers around. So you're looking at a guy that can come in, and he needs to drop a little bit of weight, needs to recompose a little bit, but he's got more bend and more explosiveness than most guys who are anywhere close to his size. I mean, he's 340, 350 pounds, and the guy can bend and move and can even run some. As he recomposes just a little bit, you're looking at a guy that, as a sophomore, is going to be a guy that you could stick on the field for a good number of snaps and expect him to be a difference maker in the middle. That's going to be a big, big asset that they can two gap with at that defensive tackle spot. Huge guy, and I think underrated in this class. I think he's better. I think partly because he ended up committing to Florida State and just not spending any time in playing the recruiting game and doing a whole lot of the camp stuff and all that, because he didn't do as much, I think he ended up ranked lower than he should be. Now, next guy on the list, another guy that I think may make some noise as a freshman. For that reason, you could slide him over into the impact player category justifiably. I just don't think he's quite as rare a prospect. He's not rare enough to move over there, but I think you're going to look at a guy that's going to have some impact as a freshman, and that's Xavier Peters. Xavier Peters is, he's a guy that is going to come in. He's very developed. Guy does not miss any time in the weight room, and he's got some real explosiveness coming off the edge. He's going to be able to get some time and contribute and take some snaps as a freshman at that defensive end spot as a pass rusher at that field end position, as they called it, the smaller end. They'll be able to use him early, and I think he projects as a guy that by even his sophomore year, junior year, you're looking at a guy that projects as a potential double digit sack guy. So again, a solid pickup, a guy that classifies for me in this 4-star category, in that potential difference maker category, and a guy that I think you should be excited about if you're a Florida State fan. The guy right below him, Malcolm Lamar. And again, I think he fits the bill of a potential difference maker, a potential matchup problem. You put him at the big end and he's huge. 6'5", really long arms. You know, can play out there, has the ability to explode and can play out there. Inside, much quicker, much more explosive than you expect from a guy of his size. I think he's going to end up playing about 280, 285, and at that, and have all sort, cause all sorts of problems with his explosiveness inside. I think there's a lot of DeMarcus Walker in Malcolm Lamar, a little longer than Walker, but I think that's a lot of what you're getting. Is you're basically, that's what you're hoping for, is DeMarcus Walker, I think, in Malcolm Lamar, and I think that's what you're getting. The next guy on that list, again, another potential difference maker, Warren Thompson. Warren Thompson, I look at as more of an Alshon Jeffrey type, one of those really big wide receivers, not going to run by you necessarily, but he will go over you. He will create space. He is going to be a guy that, particularly in the red zone, on third down, these situations, you're going to need to double. And if you've got other guys like Harrison and Young that can run by you, then that makes a guy like Warren Thompson that much more dangerous. And I think he projects really, really well in this offense where they're going to want to go vertical when they do pass. They'll be more conservative about how often they throw, but when they do throw, they're going to throw downfield more. And Thompson fits that bill. Really good prospect in terms of, I think he's got, for his size, he's got rare feet. He's got the ability to sink his hips and he's got the ability, he shows the ability to get off the line better than most of these big wide receiver prospects. A lot less raw than, say, a Kelvin Benjamin coming in. Significantly less raw. I think he's not as raw as Keith Gavin was coming in. I don't think he's quite as good a prospect overall as Keith Gavin was. Gavin, I think, a little more big play ability in terms of speed, but he's right in the same tier as Keith Gavin. That's about where he tiers in. Similar also in terms of his, he projects similarly to an Auden Tate as well. So somewhere between those guys is where I'd put Warren Thompson in terms of his potential in terms of his ceiling. Another guy that is a potential difference maker to me, Cameron McDonald, the tight end prospect. He's sort of a flex player, not just a tight end. He'll play out wide as well. They'll move him around. Actually, watching him in high school, the guy that he reminded me the most of is Auden Tate. Really strong hands, carries himself strong, and fits a lot of the traits that Tate brought to the table. But Tate in Willie Taggart's offense might have been a tight end, might have moved around, might have lined him up in line once in a while, or in the, you know, it's a flex player. And this kid, 6'4 plus, 220 plus, strong hands, not a guy that's going to drop a whole lot. Again, you put those guys out there and you line them up wide, and he's going to be a factor as a blocker on a lot of those wide screens as well. I think he's, again, a problem. He's going to be too fast for linebackers, too big for slot corners, way too big for your typical wide corner, and he's going to be a nightmare for safeties to cover. Going to cause problems. So, again, another guy that I have as a potential difference maker. The final guy that I have as a potential difference maker in this class is Anthony Lighton. And I went back and forth on a few other players, but this is a guy that I have as a potential difference maker. I think, again, he's one of the fastest guys in this class, a legit track guy. He's only 5'11", but he's not real long for 5'11", but he's a guy that I think can play three or four different positions in the secondary, brings a lot of flexibility. I wouldn't be surprised to see him end up at safety with the way that they're going to play some quarters, which means that you're going to have a safety that's going to be able to cover one-on-one. But I think you're looking at a guy that he projects really well as a slot corner in Barnett's system. He could play the field corner in Barnett's system, could play one of the safety positions in Barnett's system, and his speed allows you to do any of those things while letting him cover one-on-one and not be afraid of getting beat deep. So for me, that makes him he's a matchup eraser that you can play inside or out, and that makes him, for me, a potential difference maker at that position. Now, to put it in perspective, that's two impact players and then seven potential difference makers in this class. So that's nine potential difference makers or above in this class. Now, to put that in perspective of other prior classes, last year, the 2017 class, I had five guys ranked as impact players. That's Cam Akers, Stan Samuels III, Joshua Kando, Marvin Wilson, and Hamza Nasiruddin. Then I had 10 as potential difference makers. DJ Matthews, Kalon LeBourne, Jalen Parks, Zaquandre White, Corey Durden, Alexander Marshall, Tamorian Terry, Leonard Warner, Trey McKitty, and James Blackmon. So definitely not as many guys that I project as impact players or potential difference makers in this class, not as top heavy as prior classes. The 2016 class, I had 4 guys as potential impact players: Levante Taylor, Malik Henry, may he rest in peace as a prospect at least, Landon Dickerson, Walvensky Aime, and then I had 11 guys as potential difference makers in that class. So again, a little bit on the lower side in terms of the really, really high ceiling prospects in this class. Or, you know, there are a couple guys that actually do potentially project as higher ceiling in this class, but they're a little bit more raw. And for that reason, Florida State's really going to need to focus on landing some major, major top shelf talent in this next class. This class has a lot of good foundational players, but not quite as many of the difference maker or impact player category. But again, the prior classes help offset that a little bit. You've got so much talent, so much difference making talent that's on the roster, young talent that you can have these foundational guys be foundational. You're not depending on them to be the matchup problems. You're depending on them to play their role and play it really well. And you've got some guys in this class that can be outstanding starters. And again, in this next category, I have outstanding starters. These are guys that project as multi-year starters and foundational players in the program. And they do have generally all-conference ceilings, NFL ceilings, but either they're a little bit more raw, maybe they're a little on the shorter side, or maybe not quite as much in terms of having the traits to be a matchup problem. That's where they, or some other limitation, that's where I wind up putting them in the outstanding starter category, as opposed to the, okay, this guy is going to be a matchup problem. And in this outstanding starter category, I have right at the top Asante Samuel Jr. I was tempted to put him in the potential difference maker category, but again, I think he falls more as an outstanding starter. He's on the smallish side, but he is as polished as you're going to ask for as a freshman corner. And a guy that could come in and contribute as a freshman. Now, I don't think they're going to have a need in the secondary for him to contribute as a freshman. But I think by the time he's a sophomore, he's probably going to be starting. And if he's not starting, he'll be one of those guys that's on as a nickel or dime player and be a really solid player. And again, he projects as a guy who can play in the slot, or he can play that field corner position and do either one really well. Look, his dad is the former NFL corner who played for years, was an outstanding NFL corner despite not being all that big himself. And Samuel, he looks like a guy who his dad has taught him how to play the position from day one. His technique is already better than a lot of guys in the NFL. And he brings it. Guy plays with a chip on his shoulder. As he gains a little bit of weight, he's probably 160 now. You get him up into the 175, 180 area, and you know, do that without losing some speed, and he's a guy that has NFL potential, even though he's not on the bigger side. Guy to compare him to, actually, is Levante Taylor. And actually, you know, I had Levante Taylor as an impact category. Hindsight, I probably should have had him in the potential difference-making category, and I might end up with hindsight having Samuel feeling like I should have put Samuel up in the same spot that I should have put Taylor in. Now, the reason I had Taylor in the impact player category is I expected him to be a quality punt returner from day one, and he just never got on the field there. Samuel doesn't project as one of those, so again, not one of those guys that causes a matchup problem. But if you look at what Taylor was able to do as a corner this year, that's basically what you can kind of expect from Samuel, I think. As he gets stronger, as he gets into the program, I think that's basically what you're looking at. That's pretty good. And that's the kind of foundational player that you need in your program and you want in your secondary, particularly if you're going to play a lot of man-to-man coverage. This is a guy who's not going to get beat very much in man-to-man coverage. Yeah, he's going to have some problems against the longer receivers, but everybody does. And if you play with great technique, you can cause problems for some of those guys who survive. They live and die on their length. Next guy on that list that I have as a potential outstanding starter is Jalen Goss, the lineman, the offensive tackle. 6'7" kid from Georgia. I think he is an underrated player. You don't expect Goss to come in and play as a freshman. You're hoping he develops so that by the time he's a junior, he's got potential All-American caliber. That's what you're looking at. Really bends well, has all the traits to be the kind of guy that Greg Fry has shown he can really develop tackles. That's something in the past. He's done a great job developing raw prospects. I'm talking about 2- and 3-star guys into NFL offensive tackles. He did this at Indiana. He did this previously going back to his prior stay at Michigan, developing guys into outstanding tackles. And this guy really projects well as a Fry-type tackle. Again, you don't expect him to play as a freshman. You shouldn't expect linemen as a rule to play as a freshman. If you need linemen to play as freshmen, you're in trouble. And Florida State has plenty of talent on the offensive line, on the roster. As a developmental guy, I really like Goss. And I think he projects as a guy that could play either the left or the right side as a tackle and be very successful in, say, 2 years. It's exactly what you're trying to go for. If you can't get, say, a Petit Ferrere or somebody like that who projects as a little quicker onto the field, this is what you're getting. And I think they did a great job evaluating and landing this kid. Next in that outstanding starter category, I have Amari Gaynor. You're talking about a guy, again, foundational, doesn't even begin to deal with what I think you're getting with this kid in terms of leadership, in terms of the kind of guy you want in your locker room. And again, has all the traits to be a really good, outstanding starter. And I think this is a guy, as an early enrollee, and with as thin as the linebacker position is, he may be on the field a little earlier than the normal outstanding starter category than I would normally have that. And again, another guy that you probably could put as sliding up a category or so because of his ability to play earlier. I ended up putting him in this category because I do think that there's a little bit of stiffness to his game as a linebacker. I don't see him as a matchup problem per se. I just see him as a guy, he's going to play in the NFL. He's going to be a really good linebacker for several years. And, you know, you're looking at a guy that could be a 3-year starter at Florida State. So again, a very solid prospect, a very solid player that you can build a lot around, even though he's not the guy that again, Xavier Peters is a guy who you put out there and they're going to have to maybe double as a pass rusher. Gaynor, I don't think teams are necessarily going to have to double him or account for him in their game plan, but they'll know he's there. And I think that's what you're getting with him. And you're getting a lot of leadership. One of the most important recruits in this class. All right. Next one, Christian Meadows. Meadows is a guy that, again, I think is, he's not a guy that's going to play right away. Not a guy that, again, offensive lineman, you don't expect to play immediately. But I think as an offensive guard prospect, he is a road grader, projects really well in what Willie Taggart wants to do. He's going to have to get in better shape, though. And that's something that as a freshman, you often expect with these road grader types. I think Meadows actually projects similarly to, I think maybe better than, a guy like Cole Minshew. And actually, I had Minshew as a potential difference maker. In hindsight, I think I had Minshew a little too high. Meadows, I think, is basically Cole Minshew, but with a little better bend. Nasty guy, I think, projects as a 2- or 3-year starter as an offensive guard and a guy that you can run behind for years. Next, Anthony Grant, the running back. Grant is he's a guy that has all the traits of that all-purpose back in Taggart system and can really run. You're talking about a guy that's probably a low 4.5, legit high 4.4, if you're timing electronically, and plays with a physical edge. Again, not special. I mean, he's not as good a prospect as Cam Akers for sure. I mean, Akers has his own category. And I don't think he's quite as good a prospect as Kalon LeBourne or Zaquandre White last year. But he's in a good category as a guy that could be a starter. I think he projects in the same category as an Amir Rasul, not quite as much of a burner, but again, a guy that can really be successful in this offense. And also, if he ends up not playing running back, not working out there, he can play several other positions. He could be a linebacker, grow into a linebacker on the shorter side, but into a linebacker or even a safety. Then you have Isaiah Bolden, 6'2 guy, and in a lot of ways, again, you could put him in the potential difference maker category because of his ability to play corner at that size. Runs sub-11 in the 100 meters. Size speed is plus on both sides. But he's going to have to learn how to work. He's going to have to learn how to be the player that he needs to be. And I actually project him as a safety, not as a corner long term, because I think he's a little on the stiffer side. I might be wrong. He may be one of those guys that I should have moved up a class. But again, there's several players here that I think are on the verge of potential difference maker, but I have them down. I'd rather err on the side of being a little bit conservative here. And he's one of those guys that, again, we'll see how he works out, but I think that's where I'd put him. The next category is starter. And I don't think there's anybody in this class that I project as, you know, this is not a guy that projects as ever getting on the field as a starter or never playing starter reps. I think everybody in this class potentially projects as that. In the past, Jimbo had brought in guys, David Robbins, Calvin Bruton, DeAndre Johnson, Sean McGuire, guys that I thought were probably never going to be starters. I don't think there's anybody like that in this class. I think the remainder of the class projects as somebody who's a depth player through most of their career, but then possibly grows into a starter late in the career. And these are guys that could grow into something big, but for whatever reason, I have them down just a little bit in terms of below that outstanding starter category. First guy there is Christian Armstrong, another tackle prospect, another guy that might end up moving inside. Again, has a lot going for him as a prospect, but I think he's a little bit raw and they need to figure out where he's going to be. But I think he actually compares well to a guy like Kelly, Derek Kelly, where he can flex around on that offensive line and be a quality plug and play, quality depth at any one of those spots. I think, again, maybe a little bit lower ceiling than Kelly had, but in the same mold. And again, a guy that is on the verge of a guy that you would expect to be a starter maybe more than 1 year. So, but I think he eventually grows into a starter. It's just not clear when in his career he'll do it and where. The next guy on that list, Jamarcus Chapman. I think Chapman is a guy that, again, projects as a quality depth player for years, and a guy that probably starts at least 1 year in his career, projects as really having NFL potential. That strong side end, not gonna be the guy that everybody has to double team, but has some explosiveness, has a lot to make you excited there. But again, not a guy that I see as a you know, say 2 or 3 year starter or an instant impact guy. I see him as a guy that is going to be good depth for, you know, he's not a Josh Sweat. He's not I don't think he's in the Malcolm Lamar class. I think he's one of those guys that winds up being 20, 30 snaps a game and being quality depth for years. And a guy that you can slide inside in pass rush situations and be a problem again. Dennis Briggs, another guy that I have in this category, quality starter, but not a guy that teams necessarily have to plan for. Again, a foundational guy in terms of depth, giving you bringing a lot to the table there with being a 6'4" guy with long arms, being a guy that can flex around on that defensive line. These are guys that they can move around, that give them the ability to do several different things, to stop the run, to do a lot as quality defensive linemen. They're just not, say, guys that I expect to be All-Americans. And I think as they recruit over them a little bit in the next couple of years, these are going to be guys that I think, again, if you compare them to what you're getting on the current roster, both of these guys project in the kind of Fred Jones class or a little bit above where Fred Jones has been, as in the rotation, as guys that make plays, but maybe not guys that are going to start and be that multi-year all-conference type. Again, Chapman more likely than Briggs, I think, to become that. But both guys, again, have the frame and have the traits to become more than that. But this is just where I'm projecting them. Then you got Keyshawn Helton. I've got him projected, again, as a guy who is I think he's going to be a role player, a situational player, but he's going to have a role in jet sweeps and a space eater in this offense, and he'll do so pretty early. But again, he's more limited in terms of his size, and with some of the other guys on this team, I don't see him as a starter for many years. But I think he's going to be one of those guys that he's gonna have a role early, and it's going to be an important role. And so, again, I like what they got in terms of fitting him to the system. This is if you're thinking about what you're getting with him. Your player comp, I think, is somebody like Brandon Cooks, which is great. I mean, if you can land that guy as one of those depth players, or as a role player, that's ideal for this kind of offense. And then you got Chaz Neal, and Chaz Neal is one of the more interesting prospects in this class because, again, you've got a huge frame, really long. I mean, he 6'7" and a much longer wingspan than that. I mean, he's got like over a 7-foot wingspan. You look at his ability to bend, you look at the athleticism, and you say, that kid could become a first-round offensive tackle at the left tackle spot if he puts on the weight, if he puts in the work and develops. The problem is you can't project it as a guarantee. But this is totally a kid who, yeah, I project him as not being a starter, say, for the first two, maybe 3 years on campus. But he's a guy that could blossom into an early first rounder. Just physically, he has the traits to become that. You just can't count on it. So I've got him down here. Again, this is the kind of guy that he's a Greg Fry offensive tackle. You look at the guys that Greg Fry, your Jason Spriggs types, who were, you know, he was a tight end in high school. This is the kind of guy that Fry has had a lot of success making into that athletic blindside protector. It's just going to take a few years. He's going to be one of those guys that probably after his sophomore year, people are going, oh, is he ever going to play? And then he breaks out. But it's going to take him, say, 2-3 years to really get there. And that's fine for an offensive lineman, particularly at Florida State right now, where you've got other young offensive linemen who can play while he's learning the ropes, while he's building his body. And then finally, we've got DeMarcus Adams. I have him in this category as well. I've not been super impressed by him. I think he's a little bit more of a straight line guy, but again, a burner that gives them somebody that they can put out there to take the top off the defense and cause some problems. And again, a guy that if this is the fifth best wide receiver or fourth or fifth best wide receiver in your class, I mean, he played in the U.S. Army All-American game. This is a quality player. And that's why I think this wide receiver class, you've got three guys that I have as potential difference makers or better. And then you've got this guy as he played in the U.S. Army All-America game as a potential afterthought. One of the fastest guys that they've clocked at the Florida State camp, 6 foot. He's got some length. You see him mossing guys on his high school tape. Just not quite the guarantee. And he's got some rawness to him. He's going to take some time. But again, the traits are there. And with a quality receiver coach, with a little bit of time, say 3 years in, you're looking at a guy that becomes a real player because you can't teach the kind of speed this kid has. You can't teach those tools. So all told, this class, I think, as I evaluate it, has a lot of a lot of solid pieces. A lot of guys that you that I look at and I'm like, you know, I don't think that this is one of those guys that's going to be that's going to flame out. I don't think that this is a guy that, absent injury, busts. There's a lot of guys that could grow into something really special. Maybe not as few or not as many, a little fewer on guys on the very top end, but a lot of guys that can be those foundational players that you need. But nobody also, not very many people that are going to scare anybody away in the next class either. So again, this is not the kind of class that Willie Taggart's going to want to bring in a bunch of. But in terms of what he's got on the roster, this roster is loaded with redshirt freshmen, sophomores, and juniors who are going to be around for 2 years. What they needed was to be able to make sure that they landed quality bodies that could grow into really good players in, say, 2 years, and they did. And then they landed at the places that they needed them, impact players and potential difference makers. This is a really good class for what they need. Next year's class, they need to add a little bit more on the top end, and Florida State won't have skipped a beat in bringing in Willie Taggart and his staff. All right, we're at the 51-minute mark. I'm going to go ahead and wrap this episode here. Once again, want to thank the sponsors. Resolution Home Loans, if you need any mortgage application, if you have any need for a mortgage or a refinance or anything, these are the guys to talk to. Information's in the show notes. And Luis Marquez, if you have any need for any real estate stuff in the greater Jacksonville area, give him a call. Again, information in the show notes. Tune in very soon for a very full mailbag episode, probably multiple mailbag episodes. I'm actually tinkering with some format stuff there on how I'm going to do that. But in any case, be ready for a significantly higher volume of content over the next week. This has been the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening.
Thank you all very much, and have a great day if you want to.
I made this.